You are listening to This Week in Palestine, Truth and Justice Radio, WZBC, Boston College. Today is Sunday, July 12th, 2026. Before we step into this hour, a brief reminder for our listeners. The reflections you hear today rise from the voices of our hosts and guests alone. They are shaped by their experiences, their convictions, and their search for truth. They do not represent the official views of WZBC, Boston College, or its Board of Trustees. What you hear in this space is unfiltered. What you hear in this space is honest. What you hear in this space belongs to the people who speak it. And now, with that clarity set before us, we begin. This Week in Palestine is not a place where truth tiptoes. It does not wait at the doorway or ask permission to enter. Here, truth walks in with its shoulders squared, its voice steady, its presence undeniable. Urgency is not an accessory in this space. It is the pulse that drives every word, every story, every breath we take behind this microphone. Clarity is not a choice. It is the duty we accept the moment we speak to you. And while our heart beats in Palestine, in the alleys of Jerusalem, in the camps of the West Bank, in the shattered streets of Gaza, our sight reaches far beyond the borders drawn by occupation or diplomacy. Because the forces shaping Palestinian life do not stop at walls or wire. They move through parliaments, through boardrooms, through the quiet corridors, where powerful hands make decisions that ordinary people must live with. Wherever you are listening now, steering through the long dark hours of your shift, lifting your first cup of coffee into the morning air, or sitting in the stillness of your home, thank you for choosing to be here. I am your host and narrator, Arlene Russell. In this space, we do not sand down the truth to make it easier to swallow. We do not bend the story to comfort those who prefer silence. We do not dilute reality for the sake of anyone's convenience. Here, truth stands unfiltered. Resistance is not theory, it is breath, it is survival. Solidarity is not a slogan, it is a lineage carried from one generation to the next. The voices rising from occupied land do not waver. They rise alongside movements across the world that demand dignity, justice, and liberation. They remind us that struggle is never solitary. It is woven across borders, across histories, across the lives of people who refuse to surrender their humanity. This hour is not just a broadcast. It is a lifeline, a thread stretching from Palestine to every corner of the globe, binding devastation to determination, binding grief to a future still worth reaching for. Even in the deepest darkness, the spark of defiance endures. Even when the world turns away, that spark refuses to die. Each week, we bring you reporting that cuts through distortion, analysis that refuses disguise, and reflections that center Palestinian life in all its depth, complexity, and unbroken courage. We speak with intention because the stakes demand nothing less. This Week in Palestine is not a refuge for polite silence. It is testimony. It is urgency. It is solidarity without hesitation. The struggle for freedom is shared. It crosses borders, and it remains sacred. Today, we return to a moment the region hoped it had left behind. A moment where the fragile calm between the United States and Iran collapses, and the Middle East finds itself once again standing at the edge of escalation. A moment that describes the situation as back to the zero point. A reset back to the most dangerous point. A moment when the United States launches its largest strike against Iranian targets since the last ceasefire. And Trump threatens that this is only the beginning. This is not a story about missiles alone. It is a story about pressure, miscalculation, and the dangerous illusion that escalation can be controlled. Let's talk about the strike that broke the calm. So now, the American strike was not routine. It was large, deliberate, and designed to send a message. Targets reportedly included Iran-aligned positions in Iraq and Syria, logistical hubs used by regional militias, communication centers linked to Iranian networks. The strike shattered the quiet that had followed the last round of negotiations. It signaled that Washington was no longer willing to tolerate what it described as continued Iranian provocations. But the significance lies not in the strike itself, it lies in what it represents. A return to confrontation, a return to unpredictability, a return to the dangerous space where one misstep can ignite a regional firestorm. But why the US struck now? Analysts highlight several factors behind the timing. Iran's growing regional influence, especially through allied groups in Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, and Yemen. Attacks on US positions, which Washington blamed on Iran, aligned militias. Internal American politics, where displays of strength often serve domestic narratives. The pressure from regional allies, urging Washington to reassert deterrence. The strike was not just retaliation, it was a strategic reset, a reminder that the US still sees itself as the primary enforcer of regional order. But the region has changed. And Iran is not the same actor it was a decade ago. What was Iran's response? Iran's reaction was swift, calculated, and deeply unsettling for Washington. Officials and analysts close to Tehran described the strike as wide aggression and warned that Iran would respond in the right time and place. This phrase, familiar in regional politics, signals controlled retaliation, not emotional reaction. Iran's response strategy includes avoiding immediate escalation, preserving deterrence, leveraging regional allies. Testing Washington's limits, Iran does not want a full-scale war, but it will not allow unchecked American strikes to go unanswered. This is the dangerous balance the region now faces. Now let's talk about Trump's threats. Trump's reaction, according to analysts, was blunt. More strikes are possible. More pressure is coming. More escalation is on the table. His message was not diplomatic. It was confrontational, designed to project strength and deter Iran through fear rather than negotiation. But analysts warn that threats alone do not shape regional behavior. They can provoke. They can mislead. They can escalate. And when threats come from Washington, the entire region listens, not because it agrees, but because it fears the consequences. What about the regional ripple? The American strike and Trump's threats triggered immediate shifts across the Middle East. In Iraq, political leaders expressed concern that their country would once again become a battleground for US-Iran confrontation. In Syria, armed groups aligned with Iran increased readiness. In Lebanon, analysts warned that any escalation could spill into the southern front. In the Gulf, governments braced for potential missile exchanges. And in Palestine, the implications were immediate. Whenever Washington and Tehran clash, Israel recalibrates its strategy. Whenever Israel recalibrates, Palestinians feel the consequences. In Gaza, in the West Bank, in Jerusalem. Regional escalation rarely stays regional. It becomes local. It becomes personal. The return to the zero point. The region is back to the starting point. No trust, no stability, no clear diplomatic horizon, no guarantee that escalation can be contained. The fragile calm that followed the last ceasefire has evaporated. The region is once again navigating uncertainty, fear, and the possibility of miscalculation. This is the point where diplomacy becomes fragile and conflict becomes easy. What this means for Palestine? For Palestinians, the US-Iran confrontation is not a distant geopolitical headline. It shapes their reality directly. When Washington escalates against Iran, Israel feels emboldened. Regional attention shifts away from Palestinian rights. Humanitarian efforts in Gaza face new obstacles. Diplomatic initiatives stall. Military tension increases across the West Bank. Palestinians often find themselves living under the shadow of conflicts they did not choose. This moment is another example. The region's largest decisions continue to unfold above Palestinian heads, yet land directly on Palestinian lives. Is the region on edge? The Middle East is now standing at a dangerous crossroads. The US has escalated. Iran is preparing its response. Trump is threatening more. Regional actors are bracing for impact. This is not a temporary moment. It is a structural shift, a return to confrontation after months of fragile calm. And the region knows that once escalation begins, controlling it becomes nearly impossible. The United States launches its largest strike against Iran since the last ceasefire, and Trump threatens more escalation. One truth becomes clear. The region is back to zero, back to uncertainty, back to the dangerous space where diplomacy is fragile and conflict is easy. For Palestinians, this moment is not abstract. It is a reminder that global powers shape the landscape, but the consequences are felt at home. In every checkpoint, every airstrike, every stalled negotiation. This is not a story of war. It is a story of brinkmanship and the thin line between pressure and explosion. I'm James Kent, and you are listening to This Week in Palestine. Truth and Justice Radio, WZBC, Boston College. Next, we enter a moment the region has been whispering about for months. Gulf states negotiating quietly with Iran, away from cameras, away from official statements, away from the noise of public diplomacy. A moment when an Iraqi official breaks his silence, revealing that control over regional escalation is slipping from Trump's hands. Not because Washington is weak, but because the region is changing faster than American policy can adapt. This is not a story of secret meetings alone. It is a story of shifting alliances, collapsing assumptions, and a Middle East rewriting its own rules while global powers struggle to keep up. Here is the secret between the Gulf and Iran. Analysts say Gulf states have been quietly opening back channels with Iran for months. Not to surrender, not to align, but to survive. These negotiations reportedly focus on reducing regional tension, preventing escalation in the Red Sea and Gulf waters, managing proxy conflicts, stabilizing energy markets, preparing for a post-Trump regional landscape. The secrecy is intentional. Public diplomacy invites pressure. Private diplomacy allows flexibility. Gulf leaders understand that the region cannot afford another large-scale confrontation. And they know Iran's influence, from Lebanon to Yemen, cannot be ignored or contained by force alone. Why the Gulf is talking to Iran now? Several factors pushed Gulf states toward quiet negotiation. Economic vulnerability. Oil markets cannot withstand prolonged instability. Regional fatigue. Years of proxy conflict have drained resources and patience. Iran's expanding influence, political, military, and economic. Uncertainty in Washington, shifting priorities, inconsistent messaging, and internal divisions. Fear of miscalculation. One strike, one drone, one missile could ignite a regional firestorm. Gulf leaders are not seeking alliance with Iran. They are seeking predictability, a way to manage tension without relying solely on Washington's decisions. This is a pragmatic shift, not an ideological one. How about Iraq? Did the Iraqi official break his silence? In a rare moment, an Iraqi official publicly stated that control has slipped from Trump's hands, not because the US lacks military power, but because regional actors are no longer waiting for American permission to shape their futures. His statement reflects several realities. Iraq's position as a crossroads between US and Iranian influence. Growing frustration with external interference. Recognition that regional dynamics are no longer dictated solely by Washington. Fear that escalation between the US and Iran could devastate Iraq first. His words were not an attack. They were a warning that the region is moving independently and Washington's grip is loosening. Let's take a look at Trump's regional struggle. Analysts describe Trump's Middle East policy as a mix of pressure, unpredictability, and rapid shifts. But the region has changed. Iran has built networks of influence that cannot be dismantled through sanctions alone. Gulf states have diversified their alliances. Turkey and Saudi Arabia are asserting independent regional strategies. Israel's actions are creating diplomatic strain. Trump's attempts to control escalation through threats, sanctions, or military posturing are increasingly ineffective. The Iraqi official's statement reflects a broader sentiment. Washington can no longer dictate outcomes. It can only react to them. The regional map is being redrawn, but the question is, by who? The secret Gulf-Iran negotiations are part of a larger transformation. Saudi Arabia recalibrating its regional posture, Qatar expanding diplomatic influence, the UAE pursuing economic diplomacy over confrontation, Iran leveraging alliances across the region, Iraq seeking autonomy from both Washington and Tehran. This is not a temporary shift, it is a structural one. The Middle East is moving toward a multipolar regional order, one where power is distributed, not concentrated, and this new order is emerging quietly through private meetings, discreet envoys, and unannounced agreements. Why these negotiations matter? Secret diplomacy often shapes the region more than public statements. These Gulf-Iran talks matter because they reduce the likelihood of regional war, limit the impact of external pressure, create new pathways for conflict resolution, shift the balance of power away from Washington, force Israel to reconsider its regional strategy. They also signal that Gulf states are preparing for a future where US involvement is less predictable. What this means for Palestine? For Palestinians, these regional shifts carry profound implications. When Gulf states negotiate with Iran, they reshape alliances that influence. Pressure on Israel, support for Palestinian diplomacy, regional stability affecting Gaza and the West Bank, humanitarian access, Arab coordination on Palestinian rights. If Gulf states reduce tension with Iran, Israel loses a key justification for regional escalation. If Washington's control weakens, new diplomatic spaces may open. If the region moves toward multipolarity, Palestinian voices may find new platforms. This moment does not guarantee change, but it creates opportunity. So now let's see. Does that mean that the region is acting independently? The Middle East is no longer waiting for Washington's instructions. It is negotiating, recalibrating, and redefining its own future. Gulf states are talking to Iran. Iraq is asserting its autonomy. Turkey and Saudi Arabia are shaping regional strategy. Israel is facing new diplomatic challenges. Iran is leveraging its influence. This is a region acting independently, and that independence is reshaping everything. Today, as Gulf states negotiate quietly with Iran and an Iraqi official declares that control has slipped from Trump's hands, one truth becomes clear. The Middle East is changing. Power is shifting. Alliances are evolving. And for Palestinians, this moment is not a distant headline. It is a reminder that regional dynamics are not fixed. They can shift. They can open space. They can create new paths toward justice. This is not a story of secrecy. It is a story of transformation, and the possibility that a new regional order may finally recognize the cost of ignoring Palestine. I'm James Kent, and you are listening to This Week in Palestine, Truth and Justice Radio, WZBC, Boston College. Now, we examine a story that begins in Washington but stretches across oceans, borders, and alliances. A story CNN describes as a calculation of cost, not in dollars alone, but in credibility, stability, and global influence. A story about how much Donald Trump has cost America so far, according to CNN's analysis, and how those costs ripple outward into the Middle East, into global markets, and inevitably into Palestinian lives. This is not a story of partisan debate. It is a story of measurable impact, economic, diplomatic, and strategic, and a reminder that when the world's most powerful office shifts course, the consequences travel far beyond the Potomac. Let's look at CNN's numbers. CNN's analysis begins with a simple premise. Presidential decisions have price tags. Some are visible. Budgets, deficits, trade losses. Others are hidden. Diplomatic fallout, weakened alliances, global instability. CNN highlights several categories of cost. Economic losses tied to trade wars and tariff policies. Diplomatic strain with long-standing allies. Military expenditures linked to unpredictable foreign policy moves. Institutional damage to agencies responsible for oversight and governance. Global credibility erosion, which analysts say is harder to quantify but deeply consequential. CNN's report does not claim to predict the future. It measures what has already happened and what those numbers reveal about America's trajectory. So what's the economic cost? CNN's economic breakdown focuses on three major areas. 1. Trade wars tariffs imposed on China, Europe, and other partners triggered retaliatory measures. CNN cites billions in losses for American farmers, manufacturers, and exporters. 2. Federal deficit growth. Despite promises to reduce spending, the deficit expanded significantly. CNN attributes part of this increase to tax cuts that reduced federal revenue without offsetting reductions. 3. Market volatility. Unpredictable policy announcements, often delivered through social media, created instability in global markets. CNN notes that volatility itself carries cost, lost investment, delayed projects, and weakened confidence. These numbers are not abstract. They shape how the world views American reliability and how global actors plan their futures. But what's the diplomatic cost? CNN's analysis highlights a second category, diplomatic damage. Under Trump, several alliances experienced strain. NATO partners questioned America's commitment. European governments expressed frustration with unilateral decisions. Canada and Mexico navigated tense renegotiations. Asian allies faced uncertainty over US strategy toward China. CNN argues that diplomatic cost is harder to quantify but more dangerous. When trust erodes, cooperation becomes fragile, and fragile cooperation leads to instability, especially in regions already under pressure. Now let's look at the military and strategic cost. CNN's report also examines the military dimension. Analysts highlight increased spending tied to rapid deployments and sudden strategic shifts, confusion among allies about U.S. intentions in the Middle East, escalation risks created by inconsistent messaging toward Iran, Syria, and Iraq, strain on military leadership, forced to respond to political decisions made without long-term planning. CNN notes that unpredictability itself is a cost. When adversaries cannot anticipate U.S. behavior, they prepare for worst-case scenarios. Preparation becomes tension. Tension becomes risk. What about the institutional cost? CNN's analysis points to internal damage within American institutions. Weakened oversight agencies, high turnover in key departments, reduced morale among civil servants, conflicts between political appointees and career officials. These institutional fractures matter because they shape how effectively the U.S. can respond to crises, economic, diplomatic, or military. CNN warns that repairing institutional damage takes years, sometimes decades. What about the global credibility cost? Perhaps the most significant cost CNN identifies is credibility. Credibility is not measured in dollars, it is measured in trust. CNN argues that America's global reputation has been weakened by unpredictable policy shifts, withdrawal from international agreements, conflicts with allies, mixed messages on human rights and global norms. When credibility erodes, influence erodes, and when influence erodes, global stability suffers. What this means for the Middle East? CNN's analysis does not focus on the Middle East alone, but its implications are clear. When American credibility weakens, regional actors act independently. Alliances shift. Deterrence becomes uncertain. Diplomatic pressure on Israel fluctuates. Iran recalibrates its strategy. Gulf states diversify their partnerships. The Middle East is a region where U.S. influence has historically shaped outcomes. When that influence becomes inconsistent, the region becomes more volatile. Now, what this means for Palestine and the Palestinians? For Palestinians, CNN's numbers are not distant statistics. They translate into reduced diplomatic pressure on Israel, shifts in humanitarian funding, unpredictable U.S. engagement in peace efforts, regional instability that overshadows Palestinian rights, a weakened international system less capable of enforcing accountability. When America's global credibility declines, Palestinian issues often fall further down the international agenda. CNN's analysis indirectly reveals a truth Palestinians know well. Global instability always lands hardest on those already living under pressure. So now, as CNN runs the numbers on how much Trump has cost America so far, one truth becomes clear. Cost is not only measured in budgets or deficits, it is measured in trust, stability, and global influence. And when the world's most powerful nation absorbs these costs, the consequences travel across borders, across alliances, across lives. For Palestinians, this moment is not abstract. It is a reminder that global power shapes local reality, and that the cost of instability is never paid by one nation alone. This is not a story of blame. It is a story of consequences and the price the world pays when leadership becomes unpredictable. This is James Kent, and you are listening to This Week in Palestine, Truth and Justice Radio, WZBC Boston College. The return of a moment. Everyone hoped was gone. The region has felt this moment before. The tightening of breath, the quieting of diplomacy, the unmistakable shift in the air when two powerful states begin drifting toward confrontation. For weeks, a fragile calm held between Washington and Tehran, a calm so thin it felt like glass stretched across a fault line. Now that glass is cracking. What was once whispered as rumor is now spoken aloud as developing reality, the possibility of a renewed American military operation targeting Iran. Not a symbolic strike, not a warning shot, something larger, something that could redraw the strategic map of the Middle East. This is not a story about missiles alone. It is a story about pressure, fear, and the dangerous illusion that escalation can be controlled. It is a story about two nations whose rivalry has shaped decades of regional politics, and whose next moves could shape decades more. To understand the gravity of this moment, we must begin with the signals. The signals of escalation. Analysts across the region say the latest American movements are impossible to misinterpret. They are not subtle. They are not accidental. They are deliberate steps in a choreography that precedes confrontation. Satellite imagery reveals heightened activity at U.S. bases throughout the Gulf. Aircraft that had been stationed for routine patrols are now repositioned for rapid deployment. Naval vessels have shifted towards strategic choke points, the kind of places where presence alone sends a message. Diplomatic channels, once busy with back-and-forth attempts to maintain calm, have gone quiet. Silence, in this context, is not peace. It is preparation. The pattern is familiar. A period of uneasy calm, followed by a sudden tightening of posture. But this time, analysts say, the scale feels different. The coordination feels sharper. The intent feels heavier. Washington appears to be preparing for something more consequential than a limited strike. Something designed to reset the balance of deterrence, and the region is bracing. Why the United States is preparing now? According to regional analysts, several converging factors have pushed Washington toward this moment. Iran's expanding influence across Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, and Yemen. A network of alliances that Washington views as a challenge to its regional posture. Attacks on U.S. positions attributed to groups aligned with Tehran, raising pressure on American leadership to respond decisively. Demands from regional allies, urging Washington to reassert deterrence and restore a sense of strategic stability. Internal American politics, where displays of strength often serve domestic narratives and political cycles. Concerns over Iran's evolving military capabilities, including drones, precision missiles, and asymmetric warfare tools that complicate traditional deterrence. None of these factors alone would necessarily trigger escalation. But together, they form a strategic equation that Washington believes must be recalibrated. The United States is not preparing for confrontation out of impulse. It is preparing out of calculation, a belief that controlled escalation can reshape regional dynamics. But the region has changed, and Iran is not the same actor it was 10 or even 5 years ago. Is Iran's position measured, calculated, and unmoved? Tehran's response has been firm but measured. Officials warn that any large-scale American operation will be met with retaliation at a time and place of Iran's choosing, a phrase that signals strategic patience rather than emotional reaction. Iran's strategy, analysts say, is built on several pillars. Avoiding immediate escalation, denying Washington the justification for a wider war, leveraging regional allies, applying pressure on U.S. positions indirectly rather than through direct confrontation. Maintaining deterrence, ensuring Washington understands that any major strike will carry consequences. Preparing for multi-front retaliation, should the situation cross a threshold, Iran considers unacceptable. Iran does not seek war. but it will not allow a major American strike to pass unanswered. This is the dangerous balance the region now faces. Two actors who do not want full-scale conflict, yet are moving along a path where miscalculation could ignite one. Now let's talk about the dangerous illusion of control. Both Washington and Tehran believe they can manage escalation. Both believe they can strike without triggering a wider conflict. Both believe they can send messages without unleashing consequences they can't contain. History suggests otherwise. Escalation is rarely linear. It is rarely predictable. It is rarely controllable. Once the first strike is launched, whether by design or misinterpretation, the region's complex web of alliances, rivalries, and proxy forces can transform a limited confrontation into something far larger. This is the illusion that makes the current moment so dangerous. The belief that escalation can be neatly contained. Does the region hold its breath? Across the Middle East, governments, analysts, and civilians are watching closely. Every movement of a ship, every repositioning of aircraft, every diplomatic silence, every statement from Washington or Tehran. The fear is not only of war itself, but of what war would unleash. Disruption of global energy markets, instability across multiple states, retaliatory attacks on American positions, pressure on regional governments to take sides, a potential humanitarian crisis if conflict spreads. The region has lived through cycles of confrontation before, but this moment feels heavier, shaped by new technologies, new alliances, and new political pressures. The return of confrontation. Whether this moment becomes a turning point or a passing storm depends on decisions being made behind closed doors, decisions that may already be in motion. What is clear is this: the fragile calm has fractured. The signals are unmistakable. The stakes are enormous. This is a moment the region hoped had passed, but it has returned, carrying with it the weight of history and the uncertainty of what comes next. Let's understand Trump's role. Analysts describe Trump's posture as confrontational and unpredictable. His messaging suggests more pressure is coming, more military action is possible, more escalation is on the table. Trump's approach is not rooted in long-term strategy. It is rooted in the belief that overwhelming force can deter Iran and reassure regional allies. But analysts warn that threats alone do not shape regional behavior. They can provoke, they can mislead, they can escalate. And when threats come from Washington, the entire region listens. Not because it agrees, but because it fears the consequences. How about the regional ripple? The possibility of a major U.S. operation against Iran has already triggered shifts across the Middle East. In Iraq, political leaders fear their country will once again become the front line of U.S.-Iran confrontation. In Syria, Iran-aligned groups have increased readiness. In Lebanon, analysts warn that escalation could spill into the southern front. In the Gulf, governments brace for potential missile exchanges. In Israel, military planners recalibrate their posture, anticipating Iranian retaliation. And in Palestine, the implications are immediate. Whenever Washington escalates against Iran, Israel feels emboldened. Whenever Israel feels emboldened, Palestinians feel the consequences, in Gaza, in the West Bank, in Jerusalem. Regional escalation rarely stays regional. It becomes local. It becomes personal. The return to the danger zone, and is the war returning? The Middle East is returning to the most dangerous point. No trust, no stability, no clear diplomatic horizon, no guarantee that escalation can be contained. The fragile calm that followed previous negotiations has evaporated. The region is once again navigating uncertainty, fear, and the possibility of miscalculation. This is the point where diplomacy becomes fragile and conflict becomes easy. What this means for Palestine? For Palestinians, the US-Iran confrontation is not a distant geopolitical headline. It shapes their reality directly. When Washington escalates, Israel gains strategic cover. Regional attention shifts away from Palestinian rights. Humanitarian efforts in Gaza face new obstacles. Diplomatic initiatives stall. Military tension increases across the West Bank. Palestinians often find themselves living under the shadow of conflicts they did not choose. This moment is another example. The region's largest decisions continue to unfold above Palestinian heads, yet land directly on Palestinian lives. A region on edge. The Middle East is now standing at a dangerous crossroads. The US is preparing for a major operation. Iran is preparing its response. Trump is threatening more. Regional actors are bracing for impact. This is not a temporary moment. It is a structural shift, a return to confrontation after months of fragile calm. And the region knows that once escalation begins, controlling it becomes nearly impossible. So the war on Iran is returning, and the United States prepares for a major military operation. One truth becomes clear. The region is back on the edge. Back to uncertainty, back to the dangerous space where diplomacy is fragile and conflict is easy. For Palestinians, this moment is not abstract. It is a reminder that global powers shape the landscape, but the consequences are felt at home, in every checkpoint, every airstrike, every stalled negotiation. This is not a story of war. It is a story of brinkmanship and the thin line between pressure and explosion. This is James Kent, and you are listening to This Week in Palestine, Truth and Justice Radio, WZBC Boston College. Okay, now we explore a moment where rhetoric collides with reality. A moment when chants like "Death to America" echo across parts of the Middle East, and Washington responds with confusion, anger, or disbelief. A moment when some American commentators ask, "Did you expect a thank you note?" A moment that reveals the gap between how America sees itself and how much of the region experiences its policies. The collision between rhetoric and reality. We enter a moment where language becomes a battlefield, where chants erupt across parts of the Middle East, echoing with fury, defiance, and decades of accumulated frustration. Words like "Death to America" rise from crowds, from protests, from political ceremonies, and Washington reacts with confusion, anger, or disbelief. Commentators ask, almost mockingly, "Did you expect a thank you note?" That question doesn't just provoke debate. It exposes a deep fracture, a gulf between how America perceives its role in the region and how millions of people have lived through the consequences of its policies. The tension isn't born from slogans. It's born from history, the monologue that ignited a firestorm. The phrase, "Did you expect a thank you note?" came from a commentator responding to anti-American sentiment. Their argument was blunt. America has poured money, military support, and diplomatic effort into the Middle East. Therefore, hostility is unfair. Gratitude should be the natural response. But analysts across the region pushed back immediately. Gratitude cannot be demanded. Gratitude cannot be assumed. Gratitude must be earned. And for many communities, Iraqi, Iranian, Palestinian, Yemeni, Syrian, American involvement has not felt like protection. It has felt like upheaval. The monologue became a flashpoint because it revealed a fundamental misunderstanding. America views its actions as strategic moves on a geopolitical chessboard. The region experiences those moves as events that reshape daily life, sometimes violently. Why the chant exists. To understand why crowds shout death to America, analysts insist we must understand the history behind it. The chant is not a literal call for violence against civilians. It is a political expression of anger toward American policies. Policies that include sanctions that suffocate economies, wars that redraw borders and destabilize nations, support for governments accused of repression. I mean, Israel, of course. Military interventions with long-term consequences. Diplomatic decisions that ignore local realities. In Iran, the chant emerged from decades of tension, from the 1953 coup to sanctions that affect everything from medicine to food prices. In Iraq, anger surged after the 2003 invasion and the chaos that followed. In Palestine, frustration is tied directly to unwavering US support for Israeli policies. The chant is symbolic, a shorthand for resistance, defiance, and accumulated grievance. America's expectation of gratitude. The question, "Did you expect a thank you note?" reveals a mindset analysts often see in US foreign policy. America sees itself as a stabilizing force. The region sees America as a source of disruption. Washington often believes its interventions prevent chaos, but communities living through those interventions experience the chaos directly, in their streets, their homes, their futures. When a powerful nation expects gratitude for actions that caused suffering, resentment becomes inevitable. What is the cost of intervention? American involvement in the Middle East has carried enormous cost for both sides. For the region, millions displaced, economies shattered, infrastructure destroyed, political systems destabilized, generations traumatized. For America, trillions spent, thousands of soldiers killed or injured, diplomatic credibility strained, long-term strategic fatigue. The monologue's frustration, "Why don't they thank us?" ignores these realities. Analysts argue that gratitude cannot be expected when the consequences of intervention are still unfolding. Iran's perspective. Iran's use of the chant is often misunderstood. Analysts explain, "It is political theater. It is symbolic resistance. It targets US policy, not American civilians. It reflects decades of confrontation and sanctions." Iranian officials frequently clarify that the chant expresses opposition to government actions, not hostility toward ordinary Americans. But symbolism matters, and symbolism shapes perception. What about Iraq's perspective? In Iraq, anger toward America is rooted in lived experience. The invasion, the collapse of state institutions, the rise of sectarian conflict, years of instability, the tug of war between Washington and Tehran. When Iraqis chant against America, analysts say they are expressing frustration with a legacy that still shapes their daily lives. How about Palestine's perspective? For Palestinians, anti-American sentiment is tied directly to US support for Israel. American policies have shielded Israel from accountability, supported settlement expansion, provided military aid used in Gaza and the West Bank, undermined diplomatic efforts for Palestinian rights. So when Palestinians hear American commentators demand gratitude, the disconnect becomes glaring. Gratitude for what? For policies that deepen occupation? For decisions that ignore Palestinian suffering? Analysts say the frustration is not rooted in hatred of America itself, but in a sense of abandonment by its policies. What is the danger of misunderstanding? The question, "Did you expect a thank you note?" may sound rhetorical, even sarcastic, but analysts warn it reflects a dangerous misunderstanding. If America believes hostility is irrational, it will never understand its origins. If America dismisses anger as ingratitude, it will never confront the consequences of its actions. If America expects appreciation for policies that caused suffering, resentment will only deepen. Understanding does not require agreement. Understanding is the first step towards stability. The truth behind the rhetoric. Today, as chants echo across the region and commentators demand gratitude, one truth stands out. Rhetoric does not appear out of thin air. It emerges from history, from wounds, from decisions, from consequences. For Palestinians, Iraqis, Iranians, and others, anti-American sentiment is not a slogan. It is a reflection of lived experience. And for America, the question should not be, why don't they thank us? It should be, what have our policies created? James Kent, speaking from the studios of WZBC at Boston College, brings you This Week in Palestine, carried across the airwaves by Truth and Justice Radio, where the conversation does not shy away from complexity and where the echoes of history meet the urgency of the present. When the world sleeps, injustice grows. We step into a moment that forces the world to confront the cost of silence. A moment when UN Special Rapporteur Francesca Albanese sits across from Chris Hedges and describes, with unsettling clarity, what happens when global institutions hesitate, when governments avert their gaze, and when human rights become something negotiable rather than universal. A moment that exposes how silence transforms into complicity, and how Palestinians continue to live under systems that strengthen themselves whenever attention fades. This moment is not driven by outrage alone. It is shaped by structures, political, legal, and moral, that allow injustice to endure precisely because the world chooses not to see. The conversation that shook listeners. In her conversation with Chris Hedges, Albanese paints a global landscape where human rights are defended selectively, where violations are acknowledged only when politically convenient, and where powerful nations set precedents that ripple far beyond Palestine. Her message lands with the force of a warning. Silence is not neutrality. Silence is not diplomacy. Silence is not caution. Silence is permission. She argues that the world's failure to act is not accidental. It is engineered. It is woven into international systems that elevate alliances above accountability and geopolitics above human dignity, the architecture of silence. Albanese dismantles the idea that silence is simply the absence of action. She describes it as a structure, a deliberate, reinforced architecture built from choices made in capitals around the world. That architecture includes, as political pressure from powerful states, economic interests tied to military industries, diplomatic caution that avoids confronting allies, media narratives that reduce Palestinian suffering to background noise, legal paralysis inside institutions meant to protect civilians. This structure allows violations to continue without consequence. It allows governments to condemn violence in one region while ignoring it in another. It allows human rights to become conditional, applied selectively, withdrawn strategically. And Palestinians live inside this structure every day. When the world sleeps, Albanese describes what happens when global attention drifts away, when headlines shift, when outrage cools, violations increase, accountability evaporates, narratives are rewritten, victims are blamed, perpetrators act with confidence. She warns that sleep is not passive, sleep is dangerous. When the world sleeps, injustice accelerates. Her words echo across Gaza, across the West Bank, across refugee camps where families have learned that silence from the international community often precedes escalation. The legal battlefield. As UN Special Rapporteur, Albanese works inside a legal system designed to protect civilians. But she explains that international law is only as strong as the political will behind it. She highlights the obstacles. States refusing to cooperate with UN investigations. Legal bodies pressured by powerful governments. Human rights reports dismissed as biased. Accountability mechanisms stalled by political vetoes. Albanese argues that international law is not failing. It is being obstructed. Her role is not to invent new laws. It is to remind the world of the laws it already agreed to. Laws that are ignored whenever they become politically inconvenient. The cost of speaking. Albanese discusses the personal and professional price she pays for speaking openly about Palestinian rights. She has faced political attacks, media campaigns, attempts to discredit her work, pressure from governments unhappy with her findings. Yet she refuses to retreat. She insists that silence is not an option. Her work is grounded in documentation, evidence, and international law, not ideology. Her message is simple. Human rights apply to Palestinians too, and saying that aloud has become controversial. The global double standard. Albanese and Hedges confront a global double standard that shapes international responses to suffering. Some victims receive solidarity, others receive suspicion, some violations spark outrage, others spark excuses. This double standard is not random. It reflects geopolitical interests, alliances, and narratives shaped by powerful states. Albanese warns that when human rights become selective, they cease to be rights at all. What this means for Palestine. For Palestinians, global sleep is not theoretical. It is lived reality. When the world sleeps, settlement expansion accelerates, land confiscation increases, Gaza sinks deeper into isolation, arrests and raids intensify, humanitarian access tightens, diplomatic efforts stall. Albanese argues that Palestinians are not asking for special treatment. They are asking for the same rights the world claims to defend elsewhere. Her message resonates because it is grounded in evidence, not emotion. The responsibility of witnesses. Albanese emphasizes that witnessing injustice creates responsibility. She argues, if you see injustice, you cannot pretend you didn't. If you understand the cause, you cannot claim confusion. If you recognize the pattern, you cannot deny the consequences. Witnessing creates obligation, moral, political, human. And the world has been witnessing Palestine for decades. The truth about silence. Today, as Francesca Albanese warns what happens when the world sleeps, one truth becomes impossible to ignore. Silence is not neutral. Silence is not harmless. Silence is not diplomatic. Silence is complicity. For Palestinians, global sleep has shaped decades of suffering. Not because the world lacks information, but because it lacks the will to act. This moment is not defined by despair. It is defined by awakening, a reminder that silence can be broken, that systems can be challenged, and that human rights mean nothing unless they apply to everyone. This is James Kent. You're tuned to This Week in Palestine, carried across the airwaves by Truth and Justice Radio, broadcasting from the studios of WZBC at Boston College, a place where the signal doesn't just inform, it confronts, challenges, and refuses to look away. And just like that, we arrive at the final breaths of this week's broadcast. The slow dimming of a lantern, the quiet settling of truth after an hour that asked much of the heart. as you step back into your day, may you carry with you the questions that refuse to be buried, the courage that refuses to fade, and the curiosity that keeps truth alive in a world that works tirelessly to silence it. I'm James Kent, your host and narrator. Sharing this hour with you has been an honor. An hour grounded in clarity, in dignity, in a solidarity that does not evaporate when the headlines shift or when the cameras turn away. If something you heard today unsettled you, challenged you, or cracked open a door you didn't know existed, and if you ever feel the pull to lend your own voice to this work, know that this space will always have room for you. You can reach us anytime at twippodcasts@gmail.com. To you, our listeners, thank you. Thank you for your time, your trust, your willingness to walk this difficult path beside us. Your presence is the quiet proof that truth still matters, that memory still matters, that resistance still matters. If you missed any part of today's program, you can find us on every major platform: YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Podcast Index, iHeartRadio, Pocket Casts, Deezer, Overcast, Castro, Podchaser, Castbox, Player FM, Good Pods, and True Fans. You can also explore our full archive on radio4all.net and archive.org. Just search This Week in Palestine, or TWIP, and look for the image of the little girl raising her hands in the victory sign. We're also featured on Million Podcasts, a platform uplifting Arab American creators and helping listeners discover new voices. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. We'll return next week. Until then, take care. Stay grounded. Stay steadfast. This is This Week in Palestine. This is Occupied Land. This is Palestine. And the call for freedom continues. Free Palestine from the river to the sea. Philistine Horat. Thank you.